very young children, 2 or 3 years old, often begin to ask the question, why? And sometimes they even ask the question, why am I here? Or if they get the idea of life, they say, why am I alive? And because people don't know how to answer these questions, they put them off with foolish answers, and soon children stop asking the question why. Probably they don't grasp the depth and difficulty of the question why, but that they ask it is an indication that somewhere deep down in us, this question why is there even before we begin to think, even before we are taught anything about ourselves and the world. But this question why gets covered up, and very few people continue to pursue it. The man about whom I'm going to speak tonight, that is George Gurdjieff, never gave up seeking for the answer to the question why. And it is that that gives him a peculiar significance for our present time. As time went on, the simple question, why am I alive, took the form of, why is there life on the earth? What is this life on the earth? And in particular, what is our human life? What is its purpose? What is it for? Now this question, what is life for, is much more unusual than you might at first notice. Because generally we've already been put off this question, either by being told that God made it and it is God's business and God alone knows and it is not our business to inquire, or else that there is no other meaning and purpose to life except what we people bring into it, that if there are purposes, they're all man-made purposes. And therefore, the answer to the question, why do we exist, is to satisfy our own purposes as they arise in us. The second kind of answer has come to be preferred in recent centuries and is really the one that is preferred at the present time, that any question, what is the sense and aim of life, must be taken as a man-made question which will have a man-made answer, and we can virtually make whatever answer we choose. But if we are not satisfied with that, if we can see that there is something that cannot be right in the belief that the purpose of life on the earth is something man-made, then we come up against a new way of looking at the world and life. And it is that new way of looking that makes Gurdjieff's contribution distinctive. If there is a sense and purpose in human life that can be understood, that we have a part to play in fulfilling, and if this applies also to human life, then this purpose must have something to do with this earth, perhaps of this solar system, of this world in which we live. And we should search for this answer not by going beyond the world altogether, but by looking at the world in a different way. That is, instead of looking at the world as having arisen either through the action of blind causes or by a divine decree coming from outside the world altogether, but as having come into being, having been designed and organized for purposes that correspond to the size and significance of this solar system within the whole universe. So long as people could think that this Earth was the center of the universe, and that at any rate this solar system of ours was the central and most important mode of existence in the universe, we could think that all purposes were the same as the purposes of this Earth and this existence of life on the Earth. One of the most important changes in our view of the world has been due to the discovery that this solar system is a very insignificant part of the whole universe, and that it would be quite absurd to think that the purposes within the solar system can be the same as the purposes within the universe as a whole, and that we can say that the purposes of the universe are and are likely to remain inscrutable to us. But this may not be the case if we're prepared to look at this solar system itself. But then we have to face something, and that is that this purpose must be limited, because this solar system is a limited, minute part of the whole universe. And that brings us in front of the idea that there can be purposes which are greater than human purposes and yet are very much less, infinitesimal, compared with universal purposes. And it was that kind of reasoning that led Gurdjieff to ask this question: what is the sense and purpose of life on the Earth when looked at in the context of the solar system, not in terms of some absolute reality or in terms of the universe as a whole, but within this world which we are to some extent able to study? It's necessary to look at that to realize that calls for a very radical change in the way of looking at things, from the either of the two which are current, either the view that all purposes are human, that man himself is the sole creator of purposes, or that all purposes are divine and that God is the sole creator of purposes, and not just a local god of this solar system, but the supreme creator of the whole of this universe, in which this solar system is really so much less than a speck of dust that no comparisons can be given to give one a sense of its smallness. The change in one's attitude here requires that we should accept that there may be purposes connected with the life, the development of the solar system that are very much greater than human, and that therefore we have to adapt ourselves to whether we like it or not. This is the first answer that Gurdjieff gives to this question: what is the sense and purpose of life on the Earth, and in particular of human life? Whenever we see that something is being taken care of, something is being developed on our human level, we do expect to be able to answer the question, why are you doing this? What is this for? when you see things being made, you expect to be given an answer. What is this made for? When you see us human beings taking great care of vast herds of cattle, flocks of sheep, and other animals, and we ask, what are you doing this for? Is it because you're so fond of cows and sheep that you feel that you should expend so much energy in feeding them and preventing them from being destroyed by predators? No, the answer is no. We're taking so much care of them because we want their meat, we want their wool, we want leather from them. If we speak in the same way about mankind and say, what is this mankind being preserved on this earth for? Why has so much been carefully prepared for mankind over hundreds of millions of years? Soil which enables this vegetation to maintain life, these various minerals that have been concentrated in the earth's surface to enable man to construct all the articles that he uses. And one says, why is this? Is it because some higher power is so fond of man that over hundreds of millions of years this state of existence has been prepared? Supposing that one gives a different answer to that, no, it is not for that reason. It is because something is required from man. Something is required from this human race, analogous to the requirement that we have for meat and wool and leather. That is the answer to which Gurdjieff came. It is an answer that has not been in men's minds for a very long time. Probably the last of the great teachers who taught this view of man was Zoroaster, and that's 2,500 or more years ago. It is implicit in the older Jewish scriptures, if one really reads them impartially, that such an attitude existed in early times. But now this has been quite discarded. And the question is, are we to go back to such an ancient view that man exists here to serve a purpose that's not his own? Is he here only to be used for something? Now, when these ideas were first being introduced by Gurdjieff 50 or 60 years ago, they were very strange. And so strange and so shocking that we regarded them as intended only to shock us and to make us sit up and ask ourselves the question, what is my life for? What am I doing with it? And having received this salutary shock, then to go on living our lives, making use of what we had been taught, but to tell the truth, not really seriously facing this question, are our lives for our own benefit, or do we exist to serve some purpose greater than ourselves? Now, at this present time, a short 50 or 60 years since Gurdjieff had introduced these notions to the West, it looks very different. Human purposes are by no means so convincing as they were before. The thought that man is making sense of his own life, and the thought that man is making sense of all life on the earth is no longer plausible. We are recklessly destroying life on the earth, and we're preparing considerable destruction of human life also. And in this time also, we have destroyed in the last 60 years a great deal of human life, unnecessarily. So the people are very widely beginning to question human purposes. And therefore, perhaps people are more ready than they've been before for a very long time to look at things in some new way. So let's now try to follow the answer to the question that Gurdjieff himself has proposed. It is that human life is required to produce something that is needed for the harmony of the solar system, and particularly for the harmony of this planet. That this something is produced by the way we live our lives and by the way we die our deaths. That there is the obligation upon us to produce this something which is analogous to the meat and wool and leather that we get from the sheep and the cows. In the past, people have had the purpose of life presented to them in different ways. But generally speaking, the way of living that has been presented has been the same. There has been a general understanding of the way that people should live. That apart from certain artificial social customs that have differed from time to time, there has been a general understanding that man is not intended just to live for his own egoistic purposes, that he has obligations to fulfill, and this is still as true as it has ever been. What has changed very much over the ages has been the way in which this has been presented, the motives that have been put forward for living in this way, living a disciplined, self-restrained, non-egoistic life. Gautama Buddha appealed to reason. He said, you see life, you see that this life is not satisfying. As it stands, it is meaningless. There is only one way out of it, and that is to awaken to the truth, to awaken to the reality. This appeal to reason was a powerful appeal, but it changed very soon. Then there's an appeal to faith. This is particularly in the Judaic tradition from Abraham and Moses. This is God's command, and you believe this, and you will act according to God's command because you believe it. And the Jewish scriptures largely are concerned with strengthening this belief that it is indeed God's command that one should live in such a way. The Christian message that we should base our life upon love, upon belief in the love of God and in man's love for his fellow men, and that we should live accordingly. The Muhammad essentially put forward the doctrine of hope. There is very little, really, in the Quran or in the Islamic tradition of menaces and threats. Much more holding out of hope, the mercy and goodness of God towards man, the hope of paradise for a life that is lived reasonably well. So it can be said that, just to take those four examples, these great founders of the religions of the world have appealed to reason, to faith, to love, to hope. And all of these have failed. Man's, the appeal to reason does not work. People do not, except for a small majority, live reasonably. The Buddhist message has truly failed. Faith has also very largely disappeared in the world. It's been replaced by a kind of blind acceptance of what we are told, by a kind of conditioning which is totally different from real faith. The Christian religion has been the most tragical failure of all, because in the name of love, more wickedness and more cruelty has been perpetrated than by the followers of any religion. Islam is also, because it is the newest religion, perhaps it was the last to begin to evaporate, but also this religion of hope is being replaced by things that are totally different from that. So those ways in which men have been directed towards a way of living that corresponds to our obligations on this earth must be said to have failed. Modern man has invented a new reason, that is self-interest. We should live in a certain way because it is the most satisfying. We are less likely to get into trouble. We are more likely to have a satisfactory life if we live more or less in the same way as people have always been taught to live. This also, it is the religion of self-interest, is perhaps the most recent one, that is, to reject any other reason for right living except self-interest. But it's also the one that's collapsed the most rapidly, because we are already seeing the tragical consequences of the religion of self-interest. All of this is the paraphrase of Gurdjieff's presentation of the situation in his own books. With what does he come forward as an alternative to these ways which he asserts have failed and which I think we hardly dare to say have succeeded? What he says is that it's necessary now for man to begin to see things as they really are. He says that we have in us an instrument that enables us to see it, not indirectly through what other people have taught us, not through teachings and creeds and traditions, but by a direct perception. And the instrument of this direct perception he calls by the ancient name of conscience. But so far I've spoken about the something that man has to provide by his way of life. And now we've come to this, that man should see this for himself. And that Gurdjieff's message in effect is, It is time to see for yourself why you should live in a certain way, what your life is for, what is the sense and purpose of your existence. Possible to say that we've come to a moment of maturing in human life when we have to pass out of a childish dependence upon what others tell us and be able to see for ourselves. This is a very difficult moment for us as individuals. It is very much more difficult as applied to the human race as a whole. And it may be that it will take centuries before we can come to it. But we are at this moment of transition now, when we have to learn to look at life differently, not in terms of what has been taught and believed in the past, but in terms of what we ourselves are able to see, to experience by our own direct perceptions. In order to see, one must know what one is looking at, and therefore some indication has to be given. One of the most extraordinary steps in Gurdjieff's presentation of this is what I am now about to say. I am not aware of its having been taught or being taught at the present time in any other tradition. There are indications, as I said before, that it was taught by Zoroaster, that very extraordinary prophet of whom we know so little, and probably by Pythagoras, who according to tradition was taught this by Zoroaster. But it is not really important that it was known to a few people in the past. What matters is that it should be known now, and that we should be able to see it for ourselves. Gurdjieff calls it the doctrine of reciprocal maintenance. This doctrine of reciprocal maintenance is that everything that exists in this world depends on other things for its maintenance and must in its turn maintain the existence of others. And that this also applies to us people. It is very easy to see that we depend upon other forms of existence. We depend upon the materials of this earth's surface. We depend upon the heat and light that come from the sun. We depend upon other things that we don't know about. But most of all, we depend upon life. We are an integral part of the life of this earth. We cannot isolate ourselves from it. We couldn't eat, and in truth we couldn't breathe without life on the earth, because it is life on the earth that supplies the oxygen that makes it possible for us to breathe. And then the question comes, if we depend upon so much for our existence, what have we got to give in return? What is required of us? It is not enough to say that our bodies will return to the earth, because we are a great deal more than just a living organism. We can't say that our debt to life has been paid simply by returning our carcass to the earth from which it came. We share with all life sensitivity. This sensitivity is most highly organized in us, more highly than in any other form of life. We are capable of more varied experiences. These experiences cannot be for nothing. They are not just for our own pleasure and suffering. Human experience releases energies. These energies could not be produced in any other way. To explain this in detail would take much more time than there is available tonight, but let's assume that we do recognize that human experience is different from other forms of experience on this earth. And if all experience is associated with some kind of energy, some kind of sensitive energy, then all our experience is producing energy. And according to the kind of experience we have, which in turn depends upon the way in which our lives are lived, we shall produce energies of different qualities. What Gurdjieff asserts here is that these are the very energies that are required for the purposes of the evolution of this solar system. That there is a great process of sensitization, or as he calls it, of spiritualization, that is proceeding on this earth and throughout the solar system. And we have to make our contribution to it. And we must do so by the way in which we live our lives. We take a great deal, and we know that we take a great deal from this earth. We now see that we're taking more than we're entitled to, and that we're running heavily into debt towards the earth and towards life. This makes it even more important for us that we should know how to repay, how to square our account with the earth and with life. It is the recognition of this, the recognition that we are running into bankruptcy as a human race with debts that we shall scarcely be able to repay, that is somehow felt by people all over the world and makes them very uneasy about the way in which things are going in the world. We can interpret all this in ordinary terms of exhaustion of resources and pollution and all the other things that we know about. But deeper down, there is something that we call by the words rape of the earth, and rape of life, that makes us deeply uneasy. But we don't really understand the full significance of this. We don't understand that there are higher intelligences who are surveying this, who know that it's possible for man to live otherwise, who are concerned that man should live otherwise, but are dependent upon human understanding for this otherwise to come about. It must be faced that if this view is true, if it is true that we people do not exist on the earth just for ourselves or just by accident, but because we are needed for a purpose that is greater than ourselves, it must be faced that if we totally fail to fulfill this purpose, we shall be removed and replaced by some other form of life. this kind of thing that I am saying now may not be so explicit as this in your minds, but I think that most of you have some feeling that there is something wrong with our present attitude towards life on the earth and towards human life in particular. That there is something really seriously missing in our understanding of it all. And therefore, we should look very seriously at this answer that Gurdjieff gives. Yes, there is something missing. You are not seeing that your life is required for something, and that if you provide that something, your life will have fulfilled its purpose, and you yourself will become free. You will be free from this obligation. You will be free from your debt. And your own individual fulfillment will then be made possible. But not in isolation and separate from the rest, as sometimes people have thought in the past, that this quest for a higher and more significant life is a private matter that each one of us can pursue for ourselves, and only in company with other people, if we need them to teach us, or if we feel stronger because we are sharing with others. If we see that there is something here in which the whole of the human race is involved, and that we not only need one another, but that we have an underlying connection by this very fact that the whole of the human race is needed for a certain purpose. And if it fulfills this purpose, this human race of ours has the possibility of moving to a very different level of fulfillment. A very different and new significance can enter life. It is this that represents the attraction of the new world, that there is a possibility for man to come to a differently satisfying life, providing only that people can see that this obligation of ours to provide that certain something is fulfilled. Then comes the question of how is this to be done? What is it that Gurdjieff has to say about this? In general, there is always a difference between knowing what and knowing how. At this moment, the truth is that people neither know what nor know how. They only know to a certain extent that there is a way in which they should live. They see, if they are at all sensible and impartial and honest with themselves, that they are not living as they should. That there is something wrong with our own behavior, with your behavior and my behavior, and not something that we can unload onto other people. Something that we need to know about how to live our lives differently. But the first thing is to know what is this differently? What is this other way? It is not just to live a moral, well-ordered life. It is quite consciously and intentionally to fulfill this obligation of producing this that is required from man. And this Gurdjieff calls conscious labor and intentional suffering, a phrase that appears again and again in all his writings, in all his teaching. And it is necessary to understand just what he means by this. Conscious labor is nearly the same as what we should call service. That is, serving the purpose of our existence. This is very much directed with the future of mankind. Throughout his own life, and in every picture that he drew in his own books of the way in which life should be lived, he always emphasized the obligation that we have to serve the future, to prepare a better future for mankind, to make present sacrifices for the sake of the future. As parents, everyone sees and recognizes the necessity to make present sacrifices for their own children. But this is too limited, and even at the present time, it is being neglected. But apart from this, in family recognition of our obligations as parents, how little remains that we are prepared really to do and to sacrifice for the future. How little are we ready to do without things now, to place restraints upon our desires and impulses of the present in order that new things should be possible, that a better future should be possible. How little do we recognize that power is not to be exercised in order to get what we want, but in order to serve. It is round such things as this, the changes of attitude that are implied in this, that the meaning of conscious labor is to be understood. Why is it conscious labor? Because it is necessary to know what has to be done. It is an exceedingly difficult thing to serve the future. Many people want to do good for the future, but they don't know how. They don't know what is needed. They don't know how to sow the seeds which will make a better future. And therefore, there is a change of perception. Something needs to be understood that is not now understood. And one of the things that has to be understood is that this will always involve payment. It will always involve sacrifice. It is not fashionable nowadays to accept the necessity for suffering, to accept the necessity to suffer in order to serve. We like to give of our abundance, not to give from what hurts us. Even from our abundance we are reluctant to give. How much less when it actually hurts us. There are people, and I know some of my friends who are here in this room, I know how they live their lives prepared to put themselves in situations where they will have to suffer in order to be of service to other people, knowing that this will be inevitable. This is really all round this question of conscious labor and intentional suffering. But it's not enough to have the goodwill to do it. It is also necessary to have new kinds of perceptions, new understandings of other people. Otherwise, we are liable to blunder. It with the best intentions to do harm and not good to other people and to sow evil and not good seeds for the future. And therefore we have also the obligation to understand human life better. And this understanding of human life does start with understanding what human life is for and how this something is to be produced through the way we live our lives. And a great part of Gurdjieff's teaching was concerned with the study and understanding of man, not just as a being to live satisfactorily on this earth, but essentially as a being who has obligations to fulfill and who through fulfilling these obligations can fulfill himself. This is the notion of the transformation of man. Through this, people come together. In the absence of this, people are separated. Our present life suffers terribly from isolation and loneliness. There is the disintegration of family life, which is one of the symptoms. But in general, it is one of the sad things of our great cities that there is so much less understanding and connection with between people. Our great organizations become so impersonal that the very core of human existence is dropping away. That is the unity of the sense of the unity of mankind. We have to come towards this. We have to come towards it not as it was in the past, but in new ways. There will be changes. Something will emerge and is beginning to emerge now in the form of new perceptions, new ability of people to communicate without words and without outward signs, through a deeper understanding and perception of one another. There is a word that is commonly used, or phrase that's commonly used, that it is very important to use rightly and to respect the significance of, and that is the word group consciousness. It is used now because people are aware that in some way or other we have to get beyond our isolated and separate individualities to an awareness of the connection between us. But just as when I said before, life by reason, life by faith, life by love and hope have all failed, that something else, a new kind of perception must come that will restore these things to their real significance in life. So we must be very careful that we don't, in the same way, spoil and lose the real significance of the emerging group consciousness. There is a very great risk all the time that as the ideas that belong to the new world begin to emerge, that people will take them in old ways and not see that we have to move to something quite new and different. There is such a thing as group consciousness. I've experienced it, and with many people we have experienced what this really is, and we know that this is the one of the new modes that will enter the new world. Through this, the transformation of energies that are required from man will be very much more effective. the fulfillment of our obligation, these obligations I've spoken of, to the reciprocal maintenance of everything in this solar system, all this will be made more effective. But above all, and the most important thing of all, is that we should be able to perceive ourselves directly, not by what other people have told us, but through the development of a new consciousness within us. We should be able to see directly what the purpose of our life is, how everything is connected, how life is not separated from life, how it must be served, and how the fulfillment of our own destiny comes in doing that. All these things have been taught to us before as moral rules, ways that we ought to behave. Those are the way children are taught. This is what you ought to do. This is what your father tells you to do. We have to come further than that and see for ourselves. Here again, Gurdjieff made an enormous contribution by his many, many years of search through different countries of the world, where he was able to come in contact with groups, some ancient groups that had at some time found and that have preserved the secrets of this transformation of consciousness, of the development of a different kind of group awareness, of the overcoming of the defects in our human nature. And these techniques he left behind him. So that his contribution was not only in the direction of telling us what the new world will have to be like, but also in something in how it can be brought about. I've spoken up till now just in terms of what Gurdjieff taught, because this lecture is about him. And you may feel that I have exaggerated his importance. It is not in terms of importance that I speak, but in the terms of the uniqueness and unexpectedness of his message. If you do set yourself to understand this message more closely, you will see that there is something really strange, that this should be so different from so much that is being said at the present time. There are so many people preaching the new world, saying what man should be. They're talking, they do speak, and quite justly and rightly, about new forms of consciousness, new perceptions. But this particular thing, that our life is governed by the obligation to produce something needed for the world, and that this is connected with the way we experience, and therefore with the need to transform and change our own experiencing, our own perceptions. This is something that I don't see elsewhere. There are many other valuable things being said and done, and they're all necessary for making the new world. But this particular contribution is very necessary, because we are now coming to the point where we have to understand our life, not merely do what we are told, nor live by the promise of something wonderful for ourselves if we do what we are told. We have to be more mature than that. It would be very nice if I now were to finish my lecture at this point and ask you if there are any things that you would like to speak about, but we haven't got a very satisfactory way of recording. We haven't got a microphone by which you can be heard by everyone, so if anyone will have something to say, I will see if I can repeat it to you.